Hello everybody and welcome back to Noisy Women the podcast with me, Em, your host for today. I don't know why I started like that. I've been recording quite a lot of podcasts recently and I've been getting a little bit tongue-tied, so I apologise in advance. This episode is with the delightful Lavier Thomas, who is a freelance journalist. She also has her own scene called House of Wax, which celebrates people of colour and loads of badass talent in the music industry. Lavier and I know each other, but have never actually met in person. We have a bunch of mutual friends from the London music scene, and I'm so excited for gigs and festivals again, so we can properly hang out, because I know for a fact we'd get on like an absolute house on fire. I hope everyone is holding up okay and that the week is treating them well. I have been doing a lot of podcast recording recently, as you heard from that very, very fumbly intro, so my brain is a little bit, I guess, messy is the best way to call it. It's been lovely seeing everyone's response to the podcast recently, and I feel like the listenership is slowly growing, so that's really exciting, and I do really hope that you're all enjoying listening, because we've been putting a lot of effort into this season, and it's been really exciting to kind of grow the family. I now have an editor involved, which is super fun. It means that I'm not giving all of my brain cells to Adobe Audition anymore. It's all Al, so hello and welcome to Al. Lavier has done a lot of writing for some really diverse range of publications. She's done some incredible writing for Gigwise and Clash and a bunch of other things are under her belt. I've also linked the House of Wax Instagram down below because she's really hoping to grow that platform over the next 12 months. If you like the idea of that, please make sure you go have a little look. As always, if you could please give this a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, because we're definitely deserving of a 5-star over here. And also, if you could subscribe on Spotify, that would be fantastic. It really helps ensuring that this podcast spreads to as many people as humanly possible. If you could also share this on your Instagram, that would be great. And I will pay you all in an apple. Well, I won't, because I don't like apples. Anyway, enjoy the episode and hopefully chat to you guys soon. So welcome back to Noisy Women, the podcast. I'm here with Lavier Thomas, who is a freelance journalist. She writes for Gigwise and Clash. She's the founder of House of Waxine. She studied music journalism at uni and she does a lot of wonderful journalism bits and pieces. I've known about you for a while because I think Amelia, who was a friend of mine from school, posted some photos when she was doing her art foundation. And then that's when I like knew of you. And that must be about 4 years ago now. And then I think our paths are probably intertwiningly crossed over the last 4 years, but we've never actually met until this Zoom call.
I feel like that is definitely very much true. So Amelia and I went to the same university. So I've been friends with Amelia for like the last 4 years, I want to say. So it's really weird when you have friends in the industry, you tend to find that friends are friends. Like, for example, you're friends with Lauren McDermott. Lauren and I actually grew up in like in the same sort of town before meeting each other at uni. So I think it's massively based on who you meet and like all these connections, but it's really strange.
Yeah, I feel the same because I am originally from South London, so a lot of the people I know are mutually connected, and then when I come back it's funny that so many people live so close together, because actually I'm surprised we never all knew each other when we were younger despite having such similar like interests and like jobs. Yeah. Now, but at the time I had no idea who anyone was. I mean, I wish I did, because life would probably have panned out slightly differently, which would have been really interesting, but everything happens for a reason, I guess. Can you tell us a bit about what you do, kind of how you fell into journalism?
Yeah, so I would say I'm a music and culture writer. So most of what I write about is music reviews, interviews, and then cultural pieces that tend to tackle like misogyny in the music industry, or like pieces about people of colour. Those are the main things I write about. But I basically got into it from my BA degree in music journalism. So I went to uni and I studied that for 3 years in Surrey. And then throughout those years, I would just pitch to magazines because I was just trying to get more and more experience. I just really wanted to get my words out there, and so it's literally what I was doing. I think I was pitching to Clash for like 3 years straight before I actually started to write for them. But yeah, that's basically what I'm doing.
Good for you that you kept going for 3 years to make sure you wrote for them though. That's so sick.
Yeah, I think it takes a while to find your style of writing. I think writing's really easy to write, like anyone can write 100%, but I think finding your style and like being happy with it and making sure you're putting across like how you would say something is really hard. And then obviously each magazine has a different house style, so being able to adapt to that is quite hard. But yeah, I would definitely say it's massively pitching. Just don't stop, like keep doing it, because you'll get there.
That's really interesting, because back when I was doing my like first year of uni and kind of during my foundation year, I did a bit of music writing, but I never really kept going with it because it was something I didn't quite find the love for.
Yeah.
I feel like generally if you're a music photographer, you kind of have to write a little bit to accompany what you shoot if you don't have like a writer going alongside you to a gig. So I did it a few times just because it was easier to do it myself, but I just didn't fall as heavily in love with it as I wish I had, because I think it's like so amazing that people can write so well about really important things. Like, it's actually really important.
Yeah, definitely. And I also massively pick up on what you're saying, obviously, because you're like the photography side of things. Like, there were times where I thought, should I start learning how to shoot? Like, you know, I have so many friends who are writers but also do shoot at the same time, and I was just like, you know, is this something that I'm missing out? Is this an opportunity I'm missing out on? And as you say, sometimes you might have covered a gig or covered a festival and you might think, oh, I might need to take pictures as well. But I definitely see that how they are linked.
Yeah, and I think that's a helpful thing to maybe say to people listening if you're thinking about going into like music journalism. Don't be put off if you can't take a photo, because you can still do it if you can't take a photo. I think people assume that you have to be able to do both, but I mean, I couldn't do both. That's why I went down the photography route and you didn't. So you just went down the journalism route. Like, you can do one or the other.
Absolutely.
How do you find time to kind of balance what you're doing now? Because we were saying that you work part-time, you also obviously founded a zine, and then you write for like a bunch of different people. So if life wasn't COVID and kind of gigs were happening regularly and tours were happening and festivals were happening, how did you manage to balance everything? Because that's a lot of things to do.
Honestly, I live in my diary. My diary is absolutely everything. I have about 6 notebooks. Every year I will buy a new diary and loads of notebooks. That's the only way I stay sane.
Yep.
Yeah. I tend to forget things. Honestly, I wouldn't be anywhere without my diary. I think a normal week for me is I work part-time, so I'll only work 4 to 5 times a week. Within that, they won't always be full shifts. So let's say I work in the morning, I'll come home and I'll write in the evening. I'll always try and wake up early so I can send emails and just check so I can be on it. Because obviously, with the places I write for, they will tend to send messages in the morning about interview opportunities or features. And so I just try to make sure I'm on that. But yeah, I do, you know, I have missed out on a few things, but it is quite hard to balance.
Yeah, I'm not surprised, and it's that thing of wanting to constantly be in the loop but knowing you have to do your job, which is really hard because your heart is in the writing but you have to do the employed job.
Literally, because it pays my rent. Yeah, 100%. It's really difficult. I mean, there was a time in 2019 when I was living in London and I was working one day. I was just checking my phone when I shouldn't be. And I had an email from like Channel 5 saying they wanted to interview me like that day. And I had to be like to my boss, I'm really sorry, but are you able to let me out for like 10 minutes? And I had to do something outside of work and then go back to my like retail job. Like, it was just completely hectic and completely out of the blue. But yeah, it is weird to balance. And I hope, you know, I mean, it's manageable, but it is hard to balance.
Well, the long-term goal is that this is your full-time thing and you can give up the part-time and make sure that it's all of our dreams, so you're not the only one who feels it. How did all the stuff with House of Wax come about, and kind of founding a scene from scratch? How did you go about that process?
So it started off as a university project. So once I was in third year and I had my final major project and my dissertation. For my dissertation, I basically wrote an essay on like black innovators in the punk rock scene. And then for my F&P, like, I knew from like literally from the start in uni, I wanted to do a magazine for my final major project. And so I was like, I want to have a magazine that is a rock magazine that you look at. I mean, obviously it's not like Kerrang yet, but you look at as if it's Kerrang or Metal Hammer, like these amazing magazines that I grew up reading. And I wanted it to be like that, but to have the main focus where it prompts creators of colour in the rock industry at the forefront, because there are so many people of colour in the rock industry, indie, in metal, in punk, new wave, that are doing amazing that just aren't talked about enough. And so that was just basically the main ethos of House of Wax, is I wanted to have a zine where I could promote these people and be like, look, we're here, like, this is a thing, give us attention, kind of thing.
That's amazing. Yeah, and it's so nice when you see a gap in the market and think, look, there's nothing doing what I think needs to be done. Yeah. So I'm just going to make it instead.
Yeah. And that's basically it. And I just thought, I finished it for my uni and I got first, which I was really happy with.
Amazing. Yeah, we love that.
And I was like, do you know what? I really want to keep doing this. Like, this wasn't just a project. I was like, this is something I want to continue.
That's sick. Oh, good for you. How's it gone so far?
It's good. I find managing House of Wax with working a lot harder than managing writing with other people, because it's like, with House of Wax, I have to do everything. Like, I have to think about the posts on Instagram, think about the features I'm going to put in the next issue, think about who I want to interview and the reviews I want to. But I have just had hired, shall I say, a girl as like deputy ed, who's like doing that with me. So we do like meetings like every 2 weeks, and it's really great to just have another pair of hands on.
I feel the same as well, because as someone who, I feel like Noisy Women as a podcast is a lot of work, because it's the same as what you're saying with the magazine. Like, it's all the research and finding the people and contacting them and organizing a time, and then the edit, the upload. Like, it's the same process, but online rather than in print. And I'm the same. I've recently just found someone to help me edit, because that's the bit I find the hardest. I find the finding people kind of hard, because you can only ask so many people enough times to try and get a diverse range of people. So you have to try and like just ask as many people as possible to try and get like a nice list of people.
Yeah.
But I find the editing and like the after production takes so much longer than you ever think, that then you can't put your focus in the other bits to keep it ticking. So it's just like, you just don't have enough hands.
It's just so time consuming. And as you say, like, obviously you're working part-time or full-time, is it, on the side?
Part-time
on the side. Yeah. Like, it is so hard to manage. And I suppose like, if you were to get like an email to be like, oh, do you want to shoot this gig? You'd be like, oh yeah. Like, you know, so it's kind of like, oh, I've got all these things I want to do. But it's like a massive thing. There's a massive thing of like fear of missing out as well. Like, you feel like, oh my god, if I haven't done that show, then I'm gonna be like miles behind the next person. So it's like, you always want to be on it.
I did an episode with Melatoire, who are a radio show on Reform Radio, which you should listen to, because we talked about FOMO and we talked about how if you don't go to a gig, you feel like you're missing out on the next thing and you're going to be behind in like the process. And we also talked about the idea of being a multi-hyphenate and how people of our age group, because there are so many jobs to do within what you want to do, and people are making jobs for themselves.
Yeah.
Everyone is becoming a multi-hyphenate, because you can't afford to pay everyone to do everything. So you're just having to do everything yourself. So you're just kind of a stroke.
I know.
If I wrote what I did, my job title would be like the length of a laptop screen, because I couldn't write anything down. It'd be impossible. So you just call yourself a creative, and you have to kind of like umbrella term it. Yeah. You don't really know what creative is.
Literally could be anything. But you are so right, because we're like young creators as well. We know the struggle of wanting to be paid for our work.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't want to take, like with House of Wax, I don't want to take on loads of people, because I know I can't pay for that. I mean, I've paid for everything. I've paid for the illustrators, I've paid for like the printing of it. And so it's kind of, if I like take on a writing team or like regular people, I've got to think, I need to pay for them, you know, I can't do it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, yeah, you take on all the tasks yourself, because it's like, I'm just going to do it, I'm just going to get it out. But then it's like, oh crap, I'm going to have a mental breakdown. I can't do it.
I feel the exact same, because it's the same with Noisy Women, in that I obviously brought out the merch recently, so I paid for the illustrators and paid for the printing and all of that. So I know the exact same feeling, because I've done it too. And people want to be paid fairly for your work, because you understand as a fellow creative that you should be. So you've got to negotiate. And it's about, I think, knowing what's a good opportunity and not worth being paid for, because it might actually help you, and whether the time that you put into it is worth not being paid or whether it's just worth saying no to and respecting yourself. And I think it took me a very long time to like establish the core difference between those two things.
Girl, I have not established those differences, so I'm gonna need you to send me a note of these differences, because I'm definitely not at that stage yet. But this is a good learning curve, and I think that's something all young creatives need to bear in mind. And also at the same time, sometimes it's good to do unpaid work. I do a lot of unpaid work, and sometimes some people just kind of want the experience as well.
I agree. I feel the same as well. Like, I think there was a time that I also did a lot, and I still do to the extent, like, I do bits and pieces of unpaid work if I think that it will help. I know some people are really against it and think that everything you do should be paid for. And it was an interesting battle at uni, because we had some people who were really like hot on, if you do something, you should be paid for your time. And I completely agree.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I know for a fact that there's been things I've done in the last 4 years that I haven't been paid for, but have been so crucial to the growth of things that I'm now being paid for, so that it was worth it.
Yeah. 100%. I completely agree. I think it's such a difficult topic because it's kind of like no one wants to tread, but it's like,
yeah,
it's good to bring it up, but also just some things are, I don't necessarily feel like you need to be paid for absolutely everything. It sounds like weirdly controversial, but also,
yeah,
like don't let yourself run yourself down and work for free when you could have the opportunity to be paid.
We're on the exact same page. Who do you think's killing it at the moment? Give us some shout out people that you want to talk about. I also love this bit because then I can hopefully remember some of them and interview them too.
Right, so I'm going to shout out Yasmin Summon. So they are a person of colour and writer in the like rock industry. Their handle for Instagram is just Yasmin Summon, YASMINESUMMAN. And they write for like Metal Hammer. They've written for Kerrang. I think their words has been in Vice as well, I think it was. I just think their work's amazing. They've been doing this since uni. They're like, they've built such a massive foundation on Instagram as a writer. They kind of do a little bit what I do with House of Wax, that they're trying to promote people of colour, because there's a massive stigma in the rock industry, especially like metal and heavier music, that it's very white male dominated. And what I like about this writer is that they are really big on pushing away from that and trying to, you know, recreate the scene. So I really think they're doing great stuff.
I actually think I followed them years ago, and I'm going,
yeah,
when they had a YouTube channel. This is, we're going back about 6 yeah, years ago now, and now you've mentioned their name, I'm, yeah, thinking it might, I think it is the same person.
It actually probably more than likely will be, because they've got a TikTok account, and they still have the YouTube that they still use, and it's got thousands of subscribers on there. So I love to read their work. I've noticed a few like illustrators as well, so I'm just going to quickly shout out one of my favorites. So one of my friends who I absolutely love, I know I'm not being biased, she does amazing illustrations. Her illustration account is called Titty Abberton, so it's Titty with a Y and then a double A double B E R T O M. She just does like really cool like Renaissance meets like streetwear illustrations and like weird cool like motion pictures. I just love it. I love that she sort of balances this vintagey thing with today's aesthetic. It's really weird, but I really love it.
Sweet. I will go check that out as well, because I think it's really fun as someone who is surrounded by art and like loves it. I love finding like other niche little illustrators and creators of things, because I think,
yeah,
you don't see enough of it, and like you can never get tired of it.
Honestly. And also it's so easy to find them when they've got like thousands of followers, but it's like the people who literally have 200 to 300 followers on there, like invest in their work, because it's like they are trying just as hard as the people who have got like 1,000.
So I'm
big on that.
I think it's also like supporting people as they grow as well, because at some point,
yeah,
our platforms, I mean minus, they're still small, but it's nice to know that like hopefully in time those platforms will grow and will be the bigger platforms that are still talking about really important subjects, but have even more people talking and interacting about the subjects. And it's interesting to think that could happen in the next 5 years. We will see. I was going to say maybe House of Wax and Noisy Women will have stages at Great Escape one day. Maybe that's the aim. That'd be insane.
Could you imagine? Oh my God. I just would love it. I would love that. But like, you're so right. It's about supporting the process, like supporting them when they're building from scratch, right all the way through. Or, you know, it's difficult because it's easy to be like, oh yeah, no, I'm following this, but like not supporting them all the way through. I mean, House Wax is tiny. We've only got like 450 followers on Instagram, and every day I might boost that up. But yeah, it is just a massive support of the process, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it's really hard. But I think if you keep grinding at it, people realise that you're trying, and I think people appreciate like the graft a lot. Out of interest, have you ever had any kind of negativity or hate regarding your journalism or content online? So anything that's maybe just been a bit controversial, or people who have just been horrible unnecessarily?
Yeah, it doesn't happen a lot. Like I literally think it's happened like twice throughout the entire time I've been a writer. So the first time was probably like, I think I was in second year at uni. You know, Nambuka do that thing every year. It's like Big in Nambuka 2019, etc.
Yeah, yeah.
I did one of those and I reviewed it. This is when I was writing for Gigslets, and I reviewed it, and someone just commented on it on my Twitter like, oh, well, obviously you weren't listening to the music properly, or you're not a big fan of the band. And I think it was because in my review, I had written like, like, it wasn't like a terrible, it was just kind of like a bad review. You know, sometimes you go to a gig and you might not enjoy one of the bands, or you might not enjoy it. And I'm really big on not wanting to lie about that if I review something. And so, yeah, like I got that message from that, which was a bit awkward. But the most recent one, which I think is like really weird. So I don't know if you read about that whole Peggy Goo situation.
Yeah, I think I did.
Yeah, so there's that whole Peggy Goo situation. Yeah, so there's obviously that massive thing where that DJ, Daniel Wang, posted a massive status, basically where he was just ranting that he didn't like Peggy Goo. And it was like really weirdly misogynistic, and just he made really weird comments. And so I wrote a feature about it for Clash, about misogyny in the music industry and how there's just double standards. And I got a full-blown email. Should I read the email out? It must be a joke. Dear Lavier, just read your article regarding Daniel Wang and Peggy Goo. With all due respect, you played right into the hands of Peggy Goo's misogyny card. Unless you're working behind the scenes of the industry for years, all you'll be working on is what IG and Facebook are giving you. Goo is a well-regarded bully who treats people like shit. I hope you don't expect people to think that random folk who don't know each other are popping up from around the world with various similar stories. It might be worth your while to look into the huge amount of social media following she purchased some years back, and beyond tone-deaf Instagram posts of non-stop luxury in a year the industry that pays that has reduced to its knees. I have nothing against Goo, but what Wang did was point out a bully, granted in a very sloppy way, but that's what he did, and bullies come in all shapes and sizes. I hope you don't think we'll be playing into the hands of the Derek Mays race card next to defect all claims against him. And I was just like, who has the time?
No one. No one has the time. What is the point?
Who has the time to send someone an essay because you don't agree with an article they've written? It's just like he went and found my email, and then he sent me an essay about something that I don't get it. Who has the time?
No, I feel like now you've said that, something similar has happened to me, but I can't put my finger on what. I'm sure at some point that something similar has happened regarding someone sending me hate about something so unnecessary and it being so unnecessarily long. I think it happens all the time.
I'm not surprised. No. I'm going to say to you, I'm not surprised. Like, it probably, like, I feel like you're going to remember in like an hour and you're going to message me like, I have just remembered it.
Yeah.
It's absolutely ridiculous. Like, you wouldn't believe. I don't get a lot of people message me about my articles like on a negative note, so I was just like, this is just really weird. Like, all I could think about is like famous writers who might write like every single day who probably get stuff like this on the regular, so I just thought, god, this seems annoying. Do you know what I mean?
Oh dear. Have you got any advice for anybody else who is hoping to get into writing about music or culture, and any tips about where they can start?
Yes, I would massively say always start with your own blog, make your own website. I did that and I found that it was just fun because you find your own tone of voice. Because the thing is about making your own website and starting off on your own is you get to make your mistakes with yourself, and then you reread it like a year later and you're like, oh, okay, this isn't good. Whereas let's say you start writing for a small blog, a blog's gonna get a bit more attention than your website, so you don't want to just sort of start off big. It's really good that you find your tone of voice and then move on to pitching to blogs, because once you start writing for blogs you can get more comfortable, you meet other creatives in the industry when you write for these cute little blogs, and then it's just working your way up. I'm really big on like supporting other journalists or just supporting other like creatives, and just, you know, if you're struggling with something, just send them a DM, ask them for advice. You know, like, no one's going to say no to giving you advice. I think it's really big on just reading more as well, even if that's literally just books or literature or more articles online. You know, let's say you're idolizing wanting to write for Kerrang in like 3 years time, start reading more of Kerrang. You know, subscribe to these magazines online. I think it's just like going out there and just doing it. Like, that's the only way I'd say be my advice.
Yeah, I feel like that's a pretty valid point as well, is that the subscribing online is quite important. I think, like, to try and keep like journalism going as well. If you can, like, support other creatives who are trying to like come up in the process, give back to others, then hopefully they will help you and it will just kind of grow quite organically, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. Because I just feel like, especially the music industry, it's such a massive family. And obviously with everything going on with Corona, everything, it's been hit really, really hard. There are loads of people that want to work in it and are loads of places that we don't want to shut down. And I think it's very much a case of you scratch their back, they'll scratch yours, you know, tick for tack kind of thing.
And if they don't, you probably don't really want to hang around with them. That's the thing I find.
Yeah.
I think you can normally filter out the bad eggs quite quick.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. They're easy to spot. They are.
Have you always had an interest in music in particular? Has that been something that's just been apparent for years?
Yeah. Oh my God, yeah. Like literally since I was a kid, I think I've just always loved music. I mean, for a while, actually, before I started uni, I was going to do music performance. So me doing music journalism was kind of a bit of a swerve, but something that I've actually found I'm like obsessed with. But yeah, I've always loved music. Did it at GCSE and then A-levels to then my degree. So I've always loved it.
I think most people who work within the music industry come from the performance side of it first, because I did too. I came from like a musical theatre background.
Yeah.
Did like all the musical theatre exams. It's like I'm like grade 8 singing, whatever. But like I don't use any of it, but I use like the knowledge. I think it taught me a lot of things, but they're not necessarily things that I evidently use in my day-to-day life. But the skills are the same and like the structure is the same. And that's how I've learned it, I think, which is interesting.
Yeah. You actually make a really good point about how you think a lot of people who are in the music industry come from like music performance backgrounds, because I've found a lot of my friends do come from music performance backgrounds, whether it's that they play the piano or they play guitar. And, you know, I was learning guitar for like years at school. I do use my guitar for all of my recitals and I loved that side of it. And what I found when I went to uni was like when I was writing music reviews or live concert reviews, I could sort of use my music knowledge from the performance exams I did to like describe what techniques they would use when they were like singing or like playing guitar. And so I was like, oh, this actually like this works. And I've always loved to write anyway, so I just kind of found like it just like fitted in and I was like, this is really cool.
I feel the same with how now you're talking about it, like how I shoot gigs. And I think if you've had musicals, any form of musical training or being involved in music, I think you're naturally so kind of gifted in knowing how songs are gonna go. I'm at a gig and I'm shooting and I've never heard the band before. From having music knowledge, you generally know how a band are gonna act depending on like how their sound is. So it's so much easier to shoot because you understand it technically.
Yeah, like their body language and where you want to shoot them. Yeah, no, it makes complete sense.
Sounds a bit pretentious, but I think it's true.
No, I get you. I completely get you. It's fine. Everyone in the music industry is a music snob. We, you know, people can pretend that we are.
Yeah.
We pretend that we aren't, but we all are. I'm so pretentious when it comes. It's the one thing I allow myself to be pretentious about.
I rate that. What has been the like the biggest pinch me moment, would you say? Like, has anything happened that you just absolutely have kind of taken a step back and been like, I can't believe that this has happened?
I mean, having Nova Twins for my cover for House of Wax was like massive for me. Like, I absolutely love them. I love what they're doing. Like, they just have so much spunk in the industry. Like, they are so big on getting their voices heard. Yeah, I think being able to bag them was like a really big thing for me, because I was like, oh my God, like, this is my zine that I've created myself that people are going to be buying. You know, they're a really big band, but not only that, like, their whole ethos is just so good. They're like women in the punk industry. It was like, fuck misogyny, like, fuck all of this. They just take it in their own direction. I absolutely love that. So I think that was a really big thing for me. And then the other one was being able to interview Deftones. They're like my like childhood favorite band, like my favorite metal band. I was able to interview them last year, and honestly, like, I think I was shaking the entire phone call. I was just like, oh my God, no, why is this happening? That was probably those two are like my big I'm really proud of me moments.
Yeah, no, you should be, especially having such like an iconic cover and like being able to imagine how proud past you would have been of that.
I know, yeah. I feel like I would be like, I would never imagine like House of Wax to be able to do that a year after having doing it for my uni project. So I'm really proud of that.
Yeah, amazing. What would you say the most favourite part of your job?
What I love is if I get sent an email about a cool band or like a cool artist and I listen and I'm like, oh my God, they sound revolutionary. And I start writing about it. I'm like, guys, you need to get on this. This is amazing. I love that part of hearing it and being able to be like, everyone, you need to listen to this right now. Like, I love that. Like, the whole like discovering new music, like, it's always exciting to sort of get an email and find a band that you're really into and to be like, everyone, seriously, this is it, you need to start listening to this now. I do love that.
Yeah, it must feel like a real sense of fulfillment, I guess, if you can then see it filtering into people's music tastes and being like, I helped do that.
Yeah,
I helped.
Yeah, I did that. But also, it's just great that I've built so many great like friends and, you know, like, like the whole mutual thing, how like we've made friends through like mutuals. I love how much of a family the music industry is. Like it just builds and builds, and I just love that I can cover festivals with my friends, and it's just, it can be classed as work. Like I just love that.
I'm so excited for whenever we can have proper music and proper festivals and we can all hang out in a field, and I'm so excited for whenever that's gonna be.
I can't wait to just be like literally like just drunk walking around with my friends trying to like navigate people, be like, oh crap, I need to run to the press tent because I need to do this interview before I quickly run over to review that band. Like I miss the chaos of it. It's like chaos, but it's fun, and I miss that.
Yeah, I miss how dehydrated you get and how you're never carrying a water bottle even though you should be, and you always forget something, and there's never enough pockets. I never have enough pockets.
Yeah.
No, I've decided I'm going to invest in a nice rucksack because I think it's needed.
Do it. I think you need it. Do it. You need to do it for yourself, because this summer could be our summer, honestly.
I hope so. Let's hope COVID goes away.
COVID is just being so selfish. Like we need it to really get back. Is. We need to get back to our lives now. Like it's had its fun.
As well, actually, noted while we're recording this episode, while I remember, if anyone has the time, which you all should because you're listening to this podcast, there's an email template in my bio, which you can find linked below this podcast, where you can email your local MP about getting free visas for touring musicians in Europe. And it's really important that people email their MPs, because otherwise we're not going to be able to go to Europe. And that's going to be really sad. And if you go to Europe, you're going to have to pay so much money to go there. And it was written by the wonderful Maria, who was on the podcast about a month ago. So just thought I'd put that in there while we were talking about festivals. And also, like, live, why we won't be able to go abroad for festivals or anything like that. Like, it's all just going to stop.
Oh, my God. This is not, honestly, this is going to get political now. This whole Brexit malarkey has ruined my life, not to sound like a teenager, not to have like a massive teenage tantrum about it. You know, there have been so many like festivals I wanted to do abroad, I'm sure you as well, you know.
Yeah.
It's just made things so overcomplicated.
Honestly, when I saw that it was because the UK had like removed musicians from the list of people who were able to travel for free, I was like, why? Like, why? Well, it's all of our dreams to be able to tour Europe. Oh, no. So why are you taking it away from us? That's not fair. It's just not fair. But to see huge musicians like Biffy Clyro and huge artists get behind campaigns like this, is, it kind of confirms that they're wrong.
Yeah.
Even though you know they're wrong.
Yeah.
When you see like massive people being like, this is wrong, you're like, okay.
I need to sign this. I've not seen this. I will go into your bio and I will sign this and I'll share this around, because this is a great campaign that I want to get behind. But yeah, you're so right.
It's just literally a template that you copy and paste from the Google Doc that Maria made. You literally copy and paste it into your emails, type in your name and find your local MP's name off the list that's provided on the link that's provided on the Google Doc. Type it in, literally email it, and hopefully they'll get enough emails so they'll understand that it's an important topic and they need to discuss it.
Perfect. This is it.
This is changing. Not that I get political on the podcast, it's just important to talk about things like this, especially when it's a mutually shared interest.
No, well, 100%. And also it's linked to the music industry as well, so it's fine.
Yeah, completely. Completely. I have been asking everyone the same kind of three questions throughout the season. It's the kind of final thing to talk about. When you let us go to a gig, you're in a venue, and maybe you're with a band, or you're interviewing a band, and you're hanging around, what is the thing that you just want? What drink of preference is there? What thing do you miss about gigs? For me, I quite like a cold can of Coke, but I don't know about you.
This is interesting. Are we a non-drinker?
Yeah, I don't drink.
That's amazing.
I used to drink and then realised it became a bit of a bad habit. So as of a year and 2 weeks ago, I don't drink anymore. So hence a cold can of Coke. Before that, it probably would have been a very flat cider from like in a weird pint cup. But not anymore.
That's really good. Well, congrats on the year and a bit. That's really,
thank
really
you.
Good. I feel awful now, but mine would be a double Jack Daniels and Coke. That's my absolute go-to.
That's fine.
That's my thing. That is one thing that I'll miss. Just going in, you know, see the lads and they'll be like, right, lads, let's have some drinks, you know. Lads are everyone. But yeah, I miss that. I miss sort of that moment of going in, ordering your drink and like stumbling up to the front to just like boogie to some bands. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I miss it. I think every episode I've recorded of this season is at some point point in the episode, we just sit and go, oh, I just miss it. It's all we talk about. Oh, I miss it.
Honestly. And also, like, the music industry is, like, such a, like, family thing. You know, I don't live in London anymore, but when I did, if I go to gigs, the more you go, there's such, like, regulars at certain, like, venues, whether that's Nambuka, like, Camden Assembly, like, all these little places. You know, you meet lots of, like, music photographers that you, like, might not even talk to throughout the year, but, like, on the weekend, you'll be like, oh, my God, how are you? And it's just, like, missing those familiar faces that you'll be like, oh, I haven't seen you in a while. Do you know what I mean? It's just, I don't know, I just love it.
When you see everyone again, you'll be like, I haven't seen you in a very long time. It's been ages.
I know. And I'll be like saying to all of them, we need to go for a drink. And I'll be like, fucking ass, it's got a long list of drinks.
Longer than you thought, yeah.
Yeah.
What's been your top album of the last maybe couple of months or year? What's been the thing that you've been listening to a lot?
Oh, okay. This is really tough. This is really, really tough. Oh, I hate to say this one because it really annoys me, because this is one that I was speaking to a guy and he was talking about Fontaine's DC album. And I've never really liked them. And I was just like, oh yeah, I'm not really into them. But I'm obsessed with their album, A Hero's Death, which they released last year. I listen to it like every day. I want to say I listen to it every day. And it just annoys me because I'm not talking to this guy anymore. And I was just like, yeah, I'm not into this band. And I always listen to it. And now anytime I listen to it, I think about how he technically introduced me to the album and it makes me angry. That is my top album of the last year.
Why does that make you angry?
Because I don't want to submit to the fact that a guy I'm no longer talking to, because he's a douchebag, introduced me to this really good album, because I will be listening to it and he will know, like,
you know what, I have similar feels with a guy I used to see who was a massive Ben Howard fan, and I never listened to Ben Howard, like, ever. Yeah. I never got on the hype, and then he introduced me to the to the Ben Howard dude, and yeah, and I got really obsessed for a while, but I can't listen to it now because it makes me feel uncomfortable.
This is what I mean. Yeah. Like, it just gives you, like, memories, and you're just like, oh, for God's sake. Yeah. Like, it's really hard to, like, disattach, like, feelings or, like, people from certain music. Like, if you've got an attachment or, like, a scenario or, like, a memory, it's really hard to kind of, like, take that away from it once you've heard it.
Like, honestly, people don't talk about that enough. It's so stressful.
Yeah.
It's so stressful.
So, yeah, I'm going to say that one, but I don't want him to find out. No one tell him.
Don't know who he is, but I won't tell him. What has been your top lockdown hobby? What's been the thing that maybe you picked up during either lockdown one, lockdown two, or we're on lockdown three now?
I've got answers for each one, actually. So, lockdown one, cycling.
Okay,
absolutely,
so go through.
I got an exercise bike, and I was like cycling like a nut job, but I was really happy and I loved it. Lockdown two and three, I'm sorry, I have no hobbies. I just am not. I'm just eating. I am just a blob on my bed eating. I have no hobbies. Cycling, I do once a decade. It's not what I do, okay? Okay, I don't have any hobbies. I am just the personification of depression itself. Okay, no, I'm going to say cycling. Cycling is the hobby I have found. But I'm going to be honest with you, I don't do it regularly because it's lockdown three and I'm sick to death of them. So, yeah.
The cycling or the lockdowns?
The lockdowns. I'm sick of the lockdowns and slightly the cycling. But, you know, we've got to stay fit, haven't we, somehow?
Yeah, no, I feel the same. It was funny, lockdown one, where my old house was, it was like kind of on a, just off a high street. So, and Falmouth's quite small anyway. So you'd always see the same people on their daily walks at like the same time. And you'd see, like, sometimes you'd see people out on two walks. You'd be like, oh, they've been out twice. But yeah, everyone took up running or cycling because you saw them getting, like, progressively better. And I don't really see any of those people anymore. Yeah. I always see this one same dude though, and he took up running during lockdown, and yeah, you're still going. Yeah. It's like a year later, so I'm quite impressed.
Oh my God, I'm impressed because, as you say, like, I feel like everyone was really active with their hobbies and stuff in lockdown one, and then it's like, okay, cool, we're gonna go back to work now, and then it's like, oh, okay, no, lockdown two has happened, and it was like, okay, everyone's like slightly fell out of that, and then it's like lockdown three, and it's like, do you know what, you're just taking the piss now. I don't want to do my hobby anymore.
It's not my hobby anymore, like, is it?
No, it's not my hobby anymore.
Yeah, feel the same.
No, I don't want to do it.
Feel the same. Yeah, same page. Oh, well, we move.
I hope this is the last lockdown that they announce. This has to be the last one. It just has to be.
Thank you so much for being on the podcast. It's been so nice to chat. We've had a right laugh. It's been really nice.
I've absolutely loved it. This is my first one, and I feel like I'm going to be a regular now, I hope.
Yeah, come back. every week.
Absolutely.
Just with you. Don't need anyone else.
Yeah, no, I'm the star of the show. Get me on your website now.
I will leave your Instagram link down below, and I'll also leave House of Wax's link down below too, so people can go have a look at that and go give them a follow and support everyone. I'll also obviously leave that link to Write to Your MP down below, as I said before. I hope everyone has a nice week, and I will speak to everybody soon.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's okay. I really hope you enjoyed that episode. You can find me over on Instagram at Emily Marcofecchio. I'm not going to try and spell it. I'm just going to leave it in the show notes. That's probably my most asked question is, how do you say my surname? If you're looking for the rest of the season, they're either viewable where you're listening to this, or if you go onto my website, which is www.emilyanna.net/noisywomens1 or Noisy Women's 2, you'll find season 1 and 2 listed there. On those sites has the links to all of the guests I've had on so far, a bit of a blurb about what the podcast is about, and all other good stuff. I hope you come back for the next episode, and it was lovely to have you here.